Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's political podcast. Last night, Kezia Dugdale stepped down as the leader of Scottish Labour. I'm now joined by Fraser Nelson and Alex Massey to discuss why this might have been and what happens now. So Alex, this is the sixth leadership contest in 10 years for Scottish Labour. What's going on?
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, that is an indication of how difficult the job of leading the Scottish Labour Party has been. And this has been 20 years almost of relentless decline for Scottish Labour. Ever since they dominated the first Scottish parliamentary elections in 1999, the party has been on a downward trajectory, losing seats and share of the vote in every single subsequent election to the Holyrood Parliament. And Kezia Dugdale had only been leader for 2 years. And she says that, that this isn't really primarily a political decision. It's more a personal one, that she'd had enough perhaps of some of the backbiting that is an intrinsic part of being a leader of the Scottish Labour Party, had enough too of the complaints that had been made about her, or the whispering complaints that her new relationship with an SNP MSP was somehow impossible to square with her being a long-term leader of the Labour Party. One of her closest friends died from motor neurone disease recently. She'd also endured a spell last year where she split up with her fiancé, the woman to whom she was engaged to be married. And so she's had a sort of tumultuous time, a turbulent time lately in her personal life as well. And I think that has helped persuade her that actually there is more to life than just politics, and that, she was not someone who was going to be in politics for the rest of her life anyway. And this has helped persuade her to perhaps jump now rather than later.
Fraser, the rumour going round, though, is that she was forced out by the Corbynistas, even though she's denying it. Do you think there's much truth to that?
Well, this is, if you were to look for a political rather than a personal motive for this, you could point to the fact that Corbynism is beginning to rise a little bit in Scotland, that Jeremy Corbyn was visiting only last week. And there's also been quite a lot of tension between Kezia Dugdale and Corbyn. I mean, she asked him to stand down last year, for example, and she had to really fight for her position on Labour's governing National Executive Committee, the NEC. Now, how many Corbynistas are on this NEC is a matter of crucial importance to the Labour Party, because the NEC changes the leadership rules. If you want to get rid of Corbyn, you need to fix it with the NEC. So you can see why, in amongst all of the internal problems she would have been having in Holyrood, she would also be getting opposition from the National Party. And she would have been feeling so embattled that you would really need incredible amounts of personal commitment to carry on with that job. And I think what she's saying is that she simply does not have that level of commitment. And so that's why she quits. I mean, I can actually, knowing her a little bit, I can actually, believe what she said about her friend dying and how it made her evaluate what's important in life. You got to really think what is the best way of spending your life. She says she concluded, obviously, it wasn't leading the Scottish Labour Party, so she's left that to some other poor schmuck.
Alex, last Sunday's Sunday Herald splash was on the Labour leadership crisis. Was there any indication that she was thinking of leaving?
No, and I think that newspaper story in the Sunday Herald was extremely exaggerated. The left wing of the Scottish Labour Party doesn't dislike Kezia Dugdale nearly as much as some people are suggesting. And why would it? I mean, the Scottish Labour Party has been moving in a more populist left-wing direction for quite some time now. It has actually been doing quite well in terms of scoring points against the SNP government on issues such as tax, on austerity, on railway nationalisation, and a number of other issues, educational inequality as well. And so in that sense, Labour has actually been doing quite well in Scotland. And the differences between the left and right of the Scottish Labour Party are easily exaggerated. I mean, it is true that most Scottish members voted for Owen Smith rather than Jeremy Corbyn to be leader of the Labour Party, and Kezia Dugdale intervened on Smith's side in that contest too. But, the Scottish Party has made its peace with Corbyn. I mean, Anna Sawar, who is a likely candidate to replace Kezia Dugdale, was sort of unctuous in his praise of Corbyn as a man who spreads peace, love, prosperity and justice wherever he goes, when Corbyn was in Glasgow last week. And, you know, Sarwar is not somebody who would be identified as a Corbynista. So the future direction of the Labour Party in Scotland is, I think, quite clear. It is going to move towards the populist left because it appreciates that doing so can help it take seats from the SNP. In a Westminster context, there are 18 seats in Scotland that are currently held by the SNP that are targets for Labour. And if the Labour Party can win those, then if there were a general election, it would be well placed to win across the United Kingdom. You know, so that is clearly one future direction of travel for the Labour Party. From a unionist perspective, which for a lot of voters in Scotland, including a significant number of Labour voters, remains the preeminent issue. If Labour takes seats from the SNP, that reduces the possibility of the SNP winning a majority at the 2021 Holyrood elections, which in turn would reduce the possibility or eliminate the possibility of there being a second independence referendum at any point in the next decade. And so that's why the next Scottish parliamentary elections are so important. You know, you can construct a unionist case, that a more left-wing Labour Party that is too left-wing to be electable, but left-wing enough to damage the SNP, could be, from a unionist perspective, exactly what you would want.
Fraser, someone who hasn't been unctuous in their response has been Ruth Davison, the leader of the Scottish Tories. In fact, she's been rather sharp. She said that leadership is tough. What do you think we should make of that?
Well, I guess, I mean, Ruth Davison, you know, with some justification, will think, well, you know, any party leadership is tough. It's a question of whether you've got a stamina or not, you know. And she will be, you know, reasonably pleased that she will have outlasted now Alex Salmond, I mean, you know, Kezia Dugdale, and you know, a lot of others. I think this will lead to the momentum that you get of Ruth Davidson offering stability and coherence, which aren't two words you could normally associate with the Scottish Conservative Party. But things have changed now, and I think that we see the momentum still with the Tories, still with Ruth Davidson. And when it looked as if Labour were beginning to pick up, it turns out that Kezia has had altitude sickness and is, from whatever small heights she managed to reach, and is standing down. And I can't quite see who's going to replace her, who's out there who'll be able to challenge Ruth Davidson for, you know, I guess the idea of the alternative First Minister, because this race is for Bute House, you see. I mean, in a resignation statement, Kezia spoke about, you know, it's, you know, five more years to the next general election, but it's a lot closer to the next Scottish Parliament election. And that is one that I think Ruth Davidson has got her eyes on. I think, ultimately, although they've got roughly the same share of the votes in Scotland, Ruth Davidson feels that her journey is potentially towards Bute House, and Kezia Dugdale thought her journey was potentially towards a shallow grave with a Corbynista shovel on top.
Alex, just finally, who do you think the runners and riders are to replace Kezia Dugdale?
Well, I mentioned Anas Sarwar, son of the former Labour MP Mohammed Sarwar.
Is he not too posh, though, Alex?
I mean, well, perhaps. I mean, but, you know, Anas Sarwar is a man who has never really met a principle he thought he couldn't sacrifice. You know, he's never hidden his ambition. And I think, you know, he's clearly someone who will be a candidate. On the left, Neil Findlay and Alex Rowley, both quite close to Corbyn, have announced that they are not intending to stand. And that clears the way probably for Richard Lockwood to stand from the left, a lesser known figure. And this is one of the difficulties that whoever wins is going to have, is establishing name recognition and credibility very quickly, because they will be up against Nicola Sturgeon and Ruth Davidson, both formidable women who already have that kind of deep-rooted, widely held name recognition and appeal. And I think it'll be quite difficult for the new Labour leader, whoever it is, to match that. And that's, again, one of the reasons why, as Fraser alluded to, Ruth Davidson sees a real opportunity here, that if the Labour Party in Scotland tacks to the left, that creates more space in the centre. And Ruth Davidson, who she's making a big policy speech on Friday, setting out some of the areas in which she wants to focus Tory attention in the coming 18 months. You know, she senses a real opportunity there for a moderate centre-right party in Scotland that isn't obsessed by independence and isn't obsessed with socialism. And she thinks there are votes there to be won by that kind of a party. And that's why I think, you know, it is plausible to say that she is one of the winners this week too.
Thank you, Alex, and thank you, Fraser. And just a reminder that you can subscribe to this podcast on the iTunes store. It's called Coffee House Shots. Just a reminder that we've got a special subscription offer to The Spectator. If you get 12 issues for just £12, which includes full access to all of our website and apps, it now also comes with a moleskin notebook worth £20. To get this, just go to spectator.co.uk/pod offer. Why wait for tomorrow's papers? The best analysis of the day's news is already on Coffeehouse. To subscribe to the Evening Blend email in order to receive the best of The Spectator each day, just head to spectator.co.uk/blend.